they had a participation, and then because it's not a constant honeymoon, on that end of the camera or this side of the camera, on that end of the telephone or this side of the telephone, you make the stupid judgment you can escape. So you leave. You're tired of being dumped on. You're going to do it your way. Frankie becomes your idol instead of Jesus. And so you go out the door, or you turn the set to Dynasty or something. I don't have to. There's got to be a happier way to be a Christian. My life gets wrecked every night on the West Coast at 9 o'clock, you say. That damn preacher, he gnaws at me even when I'm not looking. I pray for a thunderstorm that puts my dish out of commission. And God should never mess up an ideal environment with mountains, beaches, and sunshine like Los Angeles by sending him here. Why doesn't he go pastor in a place where there isn't anything else to do but listen to a preacher? Look what God created on Sunday for people to enjoy in Southern California. Any dumb fool knows. No matter how many times he says he won't, he'll play this message he preaches again, so why do I have to go down there on Sunday morning when the Lord knows there's so many things to do on Saturday night that I've done, plus the fact he's not live on Saturday night normally, so it's only break a get anyway. Why get up and fight the traffic and those demon-inspired idiots that take my tax dollars to fix highways and try to fix them in such a way to keep people from going to church? What I said. Divine confirmation of the message. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
I don't care. Plus the fact, he's a fool anyway. He makes it easy for us with those modern tape machines. Who needs to go to church or feel that pressure at 9 o'clock every night? Just order the tapes, man. Listen to them when you feel masochistic. Everybody needs to be able to plan their suffering. Just get his tapes. Pick a time when you want to feel miserable, just before somebody's coming to see you that you hate. Turn on old Scott. Guaranteed to get to you, but not quite as much. Because you know, whatever the problem was that creates that intensity, it's obviously over because he's still around. How many, what in the name of? Get thee hence. and touch that instrument. What's the point of what I'm saying? Don't look at him, look at me. How many, don't stick your hand up, please. I do not want everybody to know that everybody's guilty. Lest they take comfort in the fact that they're not alone. How many have thought, well, I can escape this pressure. I don't have to put up with this anymore. Well, I can just, you know, retreat for a month or two, because I've come to the conclusion now, I've gotten smart as a member of this church, it ain't going to change. Following Scott is going to constantly be a battle full of problems and warfare and trials of faith. It's worse than school. You never graduate. So, hell. I'm just checking out for a while. Because the present problem or one worse will be there when I come back. Every time you find that God has to drive you back. And I would guess that those that have come back after much pain and lesson teaching by God would readily admit it would have been much better if they just kept their hand on the plow and kept pushing. What about those that never came back? They're lost. Gone. Never should have been here in the first place. Going to hell. You can't mean that. Yeah, I do. Well, they're serving God somewhere else. Bet you 100 to 1. 100 to 1. In a situation of their choosing that does not require as much faith and effort as the calling they abandoned. Which they have rationalized into sensible Christianity. Well, they have more time at night to put on a tea jacket, and light a candle, and get ready for the main event. I'm watching all of you this morning. I don't miss anything. And I'm marking you, too. They have more time for the little leagues. In fact, some of them have more time for their kids that left here that they're now trying to figure out why they're picking up their kid in a drug bust. All that, you mean they sacrificed their place in the kingdom for their kids and lost their kids too. Tell you, God ain't fair. It's what I said. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. You're going to go on and say, Jacob I hated. Or rather, Esau I hated, Jacob I loved. Now there's one for you. I've told you this before. That poor little old kid in there in the dark hasn't seen the light of day. The worst possible thing he could have done was kick his brother or his mother. Swimming around in darkness, and God hates him before he gets out the gate. I mean, if you think you got some arguments with God, wait till you get to hell and you and Esau have a caucus. I can just see it. Well, I don't deserve to be here. I added up plenty of merits. And all I did was try to have a few years of my life without the pressure on me like that stupid white-haired preacher kept on me all the time. I learned from him how to be free, but then he wouldn't let me, so I had to move myself. I'll guarantee you, I'll bet you 1,000 to 1, no one ever left this group in the 11 years that I've been here that is tithing more in the place that they're at than they were when they were here. I'll lay you 10,000 to 1. Let me say that again, real slow. I'll lay you 10,000 to 1 that no one ever left this work, a tither as I teach it, to rescue themselves into something they want to do, that in whatever that is they're doing elsewhere, are tithing with greater commitment than they did here. And Paul said, you prove the genuineness of God's Spirit in you by the way you give. So a lesser giving standard elsewhere and a lesser giving performance elsewhere is proof of a diminished relationship of the indwelling Spirit, and without the Spirit, you're none of His, and you don't quantify the indwelling Spirit. A lesser performance of Spirit-expressed action does not represent an 80% infilling of the Spirit. It means you're zero. Because God's Spirit in you is either zero or not, or 100%. The proof of the pudding's in the eating, friends. Some of you have been dealing too casually with God's call on your life. That he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, which he hath afore prepared unto glory. Now, I do not intend to quit preaching grace and peace and faith. Grace is God's gift, unmerited favor. I'm not going to stop preaching peace, cessation of againstness. Nor am I going to quit preaching faith, which is an act based upon belief, sustained by confidence, sustained, mind you, that when God says something, he'll do it, and that act of faith pulls the trap door loose, and the favor you receive then is unmerited, and the cessation of againstness is equally unmerited, but is your portion. But something else happens, which is the life of God's Spirit is deposited in you, a contact is made, which is maintained by the act of faith, and that life of God's Spirit in you is going to, like the pressure of a rocket that is fighting with the drag of gravity, gravity being the corruption in us of the natural man, which is corrupt according to deceiving desires. Martin Lieber pointed it out. There simply is no capacity in man to sin without convincing himself that his sin is really not sin after all. The problem that man has is not that he has corrupt desires, corrupt in that they aim a direction other than to that destiny of man, which is God and his will and the purpose he created us for, to fill the vacuum left by Satan and to rule and reign throughout eternity, that makes this life look like a drop in a bucket many times magnified. We will use our life energies in some self-serving center other than God. Whether that is family, wife, children, career, ambition, ministry. What the hell you think I've had such a hard time preaching this message for? I've developed a ministry based on a certain reputation. How dare God change my ministry? Even in its appearance. So if you want to listen to the tapes for the last 11 years, I haven't changed a whit on the foundations I preach. Denomination. Any sinner short of God, because sin, hamartia, is falling short of what God intended. And God intended a purpose for us. We are not saved that God might become our manipulative power channel. We are saved for a purpose. Even the Catholics have the fundamental doctrine. We're created for God's pleasure, for his purpose, to demonstrate his worship. And the problem is, we desire a more immediate center. One that can satisfy these temporal desires here and now, and we don't like the wait. And as A.W. Tozier said, no man deserves success in this life until his fundamental desire and the success that he seeks is a goal that, like Jesus, if necessary, we will die seeking and wait the resurrection to realize it. He got his goal. Wherefore God raised him up, gave him a name which is above every name. That marvelous passage in Philippians 2. And every knee would bow. But death first, resurrection later, and as Tozier says, most of us are not willing to wait the resurrection for our desires to be fulfilled. Every argument and every excuse against the call of God that has been laid on people in this ministry that makes it unique from the day I came to town is realized in eternity. Everyone who's failed has gotten the breath of eternity off of their life and gotten their eyes out of eternity into some piddling little goal here in time. And the self bends to that false center, falls short of God's glory, and thus is in sin. That's bad enough. But the corruption we have is that these desires are deceiving desires, with the capacity to brainwash us into thinking that God so cares about our little self-defined center that he will change his forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven. down to make me happy in my self-defined, limited, fall short of the kingdom goals. And we deceive ourselves. Until God, because we're worshiping the creation instead of the Creator, His Spirit will not always strive with us. He'll turn us over to a strong delusion. We'll believe a lie and be damned. And I've watched him over this last 11 years periodically follow the strong delusion and believe a lie and be damned. And I've seen others. It gives my pastor's heart some joy that try, though they may, to pull against the tether. Like a bit in their teeth, you see them bending around. And eventually, you begin to see that the calling of God without recall, and you see them on the fringe. You have a king's house call and say, I haven't called in years. And then you understand, yeah, the same word brought death to some, is once again bringing life. Well, then how do I as a pastor tell you, when are you going to go through that experience enough times for it to be enough? And when are you going to do what the message of Paul is trying to say to me and to you? If I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. If unwilling, nevertheless a dispensation, a stewardship. There are times that I preach and do that which God has called me to do with exhilaration. There are times I get stupid, and I fight it, but I'm on this platform today because blessed be God who called me. I am called and one of the lucky ones, and I'm still here. Now, this message had a sour note that some of you, God doesn't want. But most of them are gone. That are the ones he didn't want during the past 11 years. That's why God has inspired and anointed your pastor to set the foundations again. The fact that you're still here proves something. Unwilling, too much of the time. Willing. How many have gone through battles of faith with us and felt the pain and, oh, will this never end? And finally, when we united in faith and never took that stand that we'd gum the devil to death if necessary, when the breakthrough comes, have felt that joy that is unique to that kind of experience. Let me see your hands. And isn't it true that every single time the joy of victory outweighs the pain of the battle? Let me see your hands. Now, as I'm moving toward my anniversary month and the 12th year, and you know what the number 12 means, perfect government. Now there's only one government that can be perfect. God's government. God's government over us. This started out a harsh message, but I wanted you shook up and to attention. But I want to end on this note. Can we start getting ready to go into our 12th year as a church that God called to a unique task in these last days? And I told you that the Lord would not come this Feast of the Trumpets. I'm not telling you He won't come by the next one. Neither am I telling you He will. But as we enter into the 12th year, can the years, however long you've been in this battle, and God's Word wise you up a little this morning, this afternoon now? And will you quit kicking against the pricks? The word that God used when He called Paul on the Damascus Road. And start understanding how lucky you are. Some hear and never understand. You've got friends like that I've told you for 11 years, get rid of them, who do not understand your commitment. Friend, there ain't no other commitment that qualifies. So you ought to run from them like a scab trying to labor in God's kingdom without right. You understood it sometime or other, or you wouldn't be here. You're one of the lucky ones. You've had eyes to see. That means God has chosen you. Pharaoh and Jezebel never did see. And when are you going to wise up enough for the sake of your family and your life to get your priorities back in gear and live in the grace and peace of God with faith that has His life in resident without qualifications on His claim, and get back into that frame that made this ministry become what it was in the early years? No price too great. And each got out of his foxhole like the war depended on him alone. When are you going to stop having God have to work you over every 6 months because you get stupid and lose your dedication? Can we go into a year with at least the original band of 3,000, which we now have for September already? Determining that you will accept God's government on your life this year and quit talking back to the potter and quit thinking that you're capable of shaping God in your image and come into the submission of Scripture that God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, which is what I'm doing today, to the work of the ministry, and find your place in this ministry willingly and get back on the track of total commitment. And I've told you this week, you cannot survive or be a part of this ministry or fulfill your calling if you will not dedicate at least two nights a week to the festival. That's where we take on the devil front line. He can't even get in here. He tries, but he never has succeeded. I've put some out myself. You don't have to practice much faith sitting here today. Some of you, you're so carnal, you lost anyway. You've had to work a little to not get mad at me. Well, that's your problem. It ain't mine. You're going to hell anyway. So you need a little hell right here, so at least you've got a little bit of discipline before you get there. The front line, where your pastor is out there engaging the prince of the power of the air. and is the only voice in America that is stemming the tide of legalism and stemming the tide of liberalism on both sides and sailing that straight path of God-dominated behavior is me. There ain't no other. I've listened to those fools on television. I'm not happy. I'm not happy about the fact that God is represented by such idiots. I wish there were 1,000, nay, 7,000 like me every night on television, but there are not. I'm sorry. I'm it. Well, I never. Well, fool, who else? Who's your candidate? You leave me hang out there with a ragtag band fighting this battle alone while you live in your little self-creation of God's will and sit home in your little...